When you see judicial rot running rampant and American companies embracing insanity and wokery, you got to fight back, starting with the way that we spend our money. So for years, big mobile companies have dumped millions into leftist causes, and you know, we just kind of took it because another option didn't exist. Well, now one does. Patriot Mobile is America's only Christian conservative wireless provider, and they offer dependable nationwide coverage on all three major networks, so you get the best possible service in your area without the woke problem. Propaganda. And when you switch to Patriot Mobile, you support free speech and religious freedom, the sanctity of life, Second Amendment, and our military veterans and first responders. Their 100% U.S.-based customer service team makes switching easy. Visit patriotmobile.com/Dana or call them at 878-PATRIOT and get free activation today with offer code Dana. Ask about their coverage guarantee as well. patriotmobile.com/Dana or call 878-PATRIOT. patriotmobile.com/Dana or call 878-PATRIOT. Patriot.
That's the problem. It's the Biden family global business peddling, basically, who can call the vice president, bring him up. It's so alarming that we have seen the recording where President Biden said that he would not send the money to Ukraine unless they filed the unless they fired the prosecutor. And this was all within just months of the time frame. It stinks to high heaven.
Well, it does, because it's you know, criminal. It would be in any other reality, except one in which there's a Biden. Yep. When there's a Biden involved, there's no accountability. And that's, good heavens. I'm telling you what, it's just so frustrating. I get it. Did you guys follow all the laws this weekend?
All the
laws in general. Yeah, you know. Welcome to the show. Happy Monday. We're going to get your week started off right. I don't know. We'll talk more about that. It just tempts me to be like, well, if they don't have to follow it, then why do I have to? Right? I just wondered. Dana Lash here with you. You can listen coast to coast. You can also stream the program, and you can watch the simulcast on YouTube, Facebook, channel 347 DirecTV as well. So, to get started, there's more and more stuff that's coming out about this every day, but the news media doesn't care. They moved on. In fact, they never actually, wait, I phrased it incorrectly. It's not that they moved on, it's that they just never covered it, really. I mean, there was an absolute blackout in the media with this. Nobody wanted to talk about it. I think it's one of the biggest damn stories of our time, in addition to like all of the coronavirus stuff, because you have, you know, the first family that is there's evidence, there's a paper trail, there's money exchanges that prove beyond any shadow of a doubt that they've been involved in selling influence. They're influencers. Gosh, I hate that word. I had a whole thing this weekend about how much I hate that word. Influencer is a word for people who would be selling stuff on QVC if it wasn't for social media. That's who it is. Can I just pause here for a moment? They're like political influencers, except they sell access in exchange for millions of dollars. And then that one weird diamond that Hunter Biden got that came up, the reason we know about it is because his ex-wife was contesting ownership and finance of it in their divorce proceedings and their back and forth. So There was no big New York Times piece on it. There was no big, really, I mean, you didn't see anybody reaching out to talk to anyone in the Biden administration on the Sunday talk show circuit. You didn't see any of that. They're just skating on by. They don't want to do anything to hurt, ultimately. They don't want to do anything to hurt Biden in case they actually have to go with him. That's the unfortunate thing. If they're stuck with him, then they just... That's just how it is. If they're stuck with them, then they don't want to damage them too terribly much. But it's really there is when you look at the body of evidence, there is so much more to impeach Joe Biden over than was ever there for Trump ever. I mean, it's not even a contest. There's so much more. I mean, remember when, I'm going to go back to 2019, because they wanted to invest. They wanted to impeach Trump so bad, and that's when they brought in Mueller, and they had that investigative task force that wasn't it pretty much all Democrats? Yeah, it was all Democrats basically,
to find out that any, you know, whether or not his 2016 campaign team colluded with the Kremlin to compromise the elections. And then, you know, as it turns out, it was Democrats that actually did it. And not Fusion GPS, but the DNC and the Clinton campaign had to pay fines because they were using laundered opposition, discredited opposition research as justification to spy on people. And then they used this entity, this Fusion GPS, that should actually be charged for not being a foreign agent, a registered foreign agent, but they're not because it's different. I mean, think about all this stuff. Like how many different things did they try to for the lack of a better way to say it, trump up against the former president? Like they had the Alpha Bank story, which was bonkers and just a complete lie. Then they were trying to set up Donald Trump Jr. And that's when Steve Bannon called him a traitor. That's what, can I just make it? I don't know why people flock to him and kiss his ass, because he's the only one who he literally called Jr. a traitor. He called him a traitor. Those are his direct words. He brought a reporter into the White House and let this reporter walk around unfettered, listening to everybody's conversations. And the right is supposed to look at this guy like some strategist? Are you kidding me? Like, why do people celebrate this guy? You know, for the people that did not choose Trump for the primary in 2016 and voted for him in the general, what Bannon did is a million times worse than not voting for him in the primary election in 2016. Let's get that straight. I just find that fascinating. I just find that he gets a pat. He literally called him a tyrant, and New York Times just jumped on that, and they used that as a platform for a second story to go after Junior and act as though that's somehow indicative of guilt, because Bannon says he's a traitor, that what he did was treason. And remember, that was that Maria Fedulskaya lady, and she was one of the people who was working with Fusion GPS, coincidentally. She and Fusion GPS had been lobbying government officials to repeal the Magnitsky Act. And then that they were trying to also set, they were trying to bait him. They were trying to bait him and trap him in something. And it didn't work because he refused the meeting. And she was proclaiming that it was under the guise of adoption. Right. She wanted to talk about like that advocacy or something to that effect. Just wild. And he never accepted the bait. So I'm just amazed at this. There was so much there. There was so much that they tried to get the former president on, and they kept coming up empty handed. I mean, how many different task forces can you have? How many different specially put together all Democrat little congressional committees can you have? How many special investigators can you have? And you come up empty handed every single damn time. In fact, the only thing that you can try to get him on is in New York, when you had what's his face? The prosecutor up there, Alvin Bragg, who is trying to stretch a misdemeanor and make it into a felony because he's trying to weirdly claim that the misdemeanor was committed to hide up another offense, which would then elevate it to a felony. But there really isn't any evidence of it because they failed to cite what crime they possibly could have been hiding to justify the crime that was committed to hide it. And that was in the original filing document, so a charging doc. So they literally have nothing. You come up empty handed every damn time. Now, I'll give you the document storage in Mar-a-Lago is a little trickier. I'll give you that. But this other stuff, they come up empty handed. We're talking impeachment stuff here. In the meantime, how many people in the media did you have that colluded with us, that colluded with Democrats? The first impeachment, they were trying to get ahead of the Biden influence stuff. That's what that was about. They wanted to come up with this Ukrainian scheme involving Trump in that call. They wanted to do that because they knew what was coming out about Hunter Biden. And they thought, well, if we can mire Donald Trump's name in with Ukraine, people will they'll just think that it's sort of, they will discredit a story or take it less seriously if they think that it was released as a response of revenge, as opposed to whistleblowing or an investigative report. Because people had been working on that Biden story with Ukraine for a long time, and they knew it was coming out. So they thought they'd poison the well. They'll get ahead of it by accusing Trump of doing literally what they did and then poison the well so that he can never get away from it. And it sort of muddies the water a bit in defense of the Bidens, gives them some cover. That's exactly why they did that. That's why they did the whole thing in the first place. Everything. There is more stuff here, particularly with that 1023 form. that shows that it was absolutely quid pro quo. That money did change hands. That money was received from foreign countries by the First Family going into their bank accounts, being laundered. There's so much evidence. It's beyond question at this point. It's demand. These are impeachable offenses. But you're never going to have that with the Senate. I mean, you can have the House vote for it, but the Senate has to actually try it. It's never going to happen. You think it's going to happen with Chuck Schumer? Not a chance. The only way they would do that is if they wanted to get rid of Biden and they had a humdinger of a winner in the wings. And they don't have that with Gavin Newsom. So it's kind of a catch-22 for them. I heard there was some kind of audio over the week. I heard it in passing. I don't want to play it, but it touched on, again, what I always hear from Democrats. Oh, the Republican infighting. Oh, they're trying to focus so much on that primary to cover their own butts. I mean, the media, I mean, primary, you know, going back and forth is normal. What isn't normal is the absence of any up-and-comers, save for maybe a very thirsty Gavin Newsom on the left. That is entirely unusual. That's a party that doesn't plan for longevity. That's a party that doesn't plan for elections. It's a party that doesn't plan for its own survival. They have been so obsessed with trying to kneecap Republicans that they haven't had time to actually invest in their own foundation, their structure. It is really unusual. Axios had a piece, the crumbling case, Republicans' crumbling case against Biden on crime. I'm just curious as to how much crack Hunter gave them to write this stupid headline. They say, oh no, it's a crumbling case. It's not a crumbling case. I mean, you have receipt after receipt. What's crumbling about multiple receipts showing that they received money from Romania, China, etc., millions of dollars. And interestingly enough, then there was, and from Burisma, Ukraine, then there were actions that really, really benefited those entities, those nations that were giving them money. The FBI was very, very unhappy with Chuck Grassley for releasing the FBI memo, the 1023 that we talked about last week, because they were saying that they were upset about it because they said it puts some people at risk. The only people at risk that I care about are the American people. Business Insider said that the safeguards the FBI placed on the production of this information are necessary to protect the safety of confidential sources and the integrity of sensitive investigations. That's if you actually believe that there was any integrity to a quote-unquote sensitive quote-unquote investigation in the first place. They said today's release of the 1023 form is at minimum unnecessarily risks the safety of a confidential source. That's BS. And they were very unhappy with Grassley. So who's going to be at risk? I mean, the safeguards that they put on them, what sources are they talking about discrediting? The ones that Democrats are trying to destroy right now? You know, the sources that Democrats are trying to destroy? Is the FBI coming out and warning, well, Chuck Grassley shouldn't have done this because Democrats are going to ruin their lives? Well, thanks for admitting what we all knew. They're going to ruin their lives regardless of whether they're public or not, so they might as well be public. Sometimes the safest place is in the spotlight. I mean, you know, remember, it was all false, so what do they care? We got a lot more to hit, including, let me give you a little bit of a rundown here. The accusation about Joe knowing the business of Hunter Biden, apparently, he spoke directly with Hunter's business partners dozens of times. This is the new story that's out this morning. We're going to get also into some very interesting, couple of things coming out about the economy, because the UPS strike, this looks like it may happen. This is getting closer and closer to reality. And this is going to be, it's going to direct everybody. You listening, you're going to be impacted by this significantly. And so they're going to go on strike August 1st if they don't have this agreement. And we're getting closer and closer to this. We're going to talk about what that means. We're also going to get into some of the media malpractice. We're going to get into some of the latest with immigration. There was another bus of illegal entrants sent to Los Angeles from Texas.
Black Rifle Coffee Company, together with the Boot Campaign, are on a mission to raise $1 million to change the lives of veterans. Now through the end of the year, when you grab a can of ready-to-drink coffee, you can help contribute to making this massive donation possible. The Boot Boot Campaign is one of the most renowned veteran-focused nonprofits in the country, working tirelessly to provide life-changing aid and benefits to service members and their families. Black Rifle Ready to Drink Coffee is available in several great-tasting flavors at blackriflecoffee.com/Dana or at convenience stores nationwide. Whether it's the berry mocha, vanilla bomb, or espresso salted caramel, every can helps. Fuel your caffeine fix while making a huge difference in the lives of veterans and their families. Black Rifle Coffee Company is committed to serving the veteran community, and with your help, we can all continue to make a difference. Let's raise a can together and keep fueling Americans for a good cause. Visit blackriflecoffee.com/Dana. That's blackriflecoffee.com/Dana.
Your wages rising? Twitter stepped in to correct one of Biden's tweets claiming wages are higher. As food prices continue to soar, could this be why Biden's approval ratings on the economy are in the low 30s? Where should you turn to get real info on the power of your dollar?
Check out the Watchdog on Wall Street podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
So Elon Musk has officially rebranded Twitter as X. And it's just the logo. I cannot get the G Generation X song out of my head. And I'm actually disappointed that he didn't announced this, like how D-Generation X entered WWE SummerSlam back in 2009 when they had the tanks, and that was like the craziest thing ever. That's what he's got. That's what he should have done. But he officially rebranded it as X, and so now on Twitter, and I guess the app, it's X now. So wait. Maybe you're wondering what I asked. So if it's called X, are they still called tweets? Apparently, no. They're called X's, except when you compose the post and send it, it still says sending tweet. So I don't know. I'm very confused right now, but he has rebranded it. And I don't know. This is all part of what he's pushing for, this everything app, but they want it to be like a super app. It's like the everything app. The building of it is underway. And Musk was like, this is part of rethinking what the entire concept of Twitter actually is. So I don't know. I'll read you this statement that came from their CEO, and I'm like, I don't know what. I just wanted to like go at trolls. I mean, I'm not, you know, you're making this way deeper than it needs to be. All right. So I am shocked by this. And Kane, did I send this to you? I can't remember. So they're saying that aloe vera is actually carcinogenic. What? Yeah, it's the World Health Organization's and bam, blah, 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 blah. They're saying that in addition to like the aspartame and all of that, they were saying that that really aloe vera, if you're eating the wrong bit of it, who eats this damn thing? They said that it can be carcinogenic. Who eats it? So like, wait a minute. If you eat it or drink it, how is that any different from absorbing it in your skin via like sunburn relief or a moisturizer or soap or something like that? I don't know if I trust this thing. I'm going to put this in your rundown so you can read this too. I'm curious as to your thoughts on this. Also, a top psychiatrist was accused of keeping patients against their will in Arkansas in a massive Medicaid scam. Yeah, they got found out. That's crazy. India's rice export. Their ban on rice exports triggers a panic buying at the U.S. supermarkets. 20-pound bags are going from $16 to almost $50. Stay with us. You've heard me rave about the Kel-Tec KSG shotgun for a long time, and the fact is, I cannot say enough good things about it. I mean, the KSG is the one that started it all, made ordinary shotguns obsolete, and still reigns supreme. But the big reason I keep raving about it is I'm also the proud owner of one, at least. And trust me, I really put the KSG to the test before adding it to my collection. It's perfect for home defense or tactical situations. And this 12 gauge is a reliable go-to that's easy to handle for everyone. The KSG shotgun is the first 12 gauge pump action shotgun chambered for 3-inch shells and with dual tube magazines, offers a capacity of 12+1. Its downward shell ejection makes the KSG truly ambidextrous and ejects shells away from your face. It's compact, lightweight, and easy to maneuver and control. Learn more about the KSG shotgun at KeltecWeapons.com and follow Kel-Tec on social media. Visit KeltecWeapons.com. That's KELTEC Weapons.com.
YouTube, Facebook, or DirecTV. If you're looking for the number one afternoon host in the country, you've found her. Download the podcast every day to catch up. The Dana Show.
Greg Abbott has blood on his hands, but we can't stop at criticizing the governor. We must continue to look for solutions, and those solutions can only be found in one place. That is in the Biden administration. His administration has the responsibility to enforce federal law, to honor our treaty obligations with Mexico, and to protect the lives of these asylum seekers.
I will say, so that's Robert O'Rourke, the super white Irishman that likes to pretend that he's Hispanic and calls himself Beto. He's Elizabeth Warren 2.0. In fact, his dad called him that. And there's a Dallas Morning News piece that's since been, well, they thought it was scrub, but Way Back Never Forgets. And it's up there, and his dad admitted that he gave him that nickname because that plays well to Hispanic voters. I mean, his dad said that. Welcome back to the show, Dana Lash here with you, your lovable curmudgeon. My first thought upon seeing that video was I was surprised that he had enough testosterone to go that much facial hair. That was my first thought. My second thought was, oh, he's still here. Third thought was, is he still unemployed? And fourth thought, oh, his poor wife. But she knew what she was getting into. So those were, you know, that's just my initial thought. I love how the accusation is that Texas Governor Greg Abbott is the one that has blood on his hands and not the politicians who are empowering the cartels by encouraging the lawlessness and helping them make bank. I mean, this administration has done more to enrichen the cartels than even shockingly, I dare say, Barack Obama. Or maybe as much. Maybe they're tied. Because it was pretty bad under him, too. The cartels love Biden because his push of lawlessness makes them money. They get to engage in human trafficking. And Biden's own Health and Human Services Secretary, Xavier Becerra, who for some reason got that job, despite not at all having a background in health or human services. He was the AG of California and a big gun control guy. He was the guy who was on video blasting those third party NGOs about how they weren't working as efficiently and as fast as a Henry Ford, conveyor. And how are they not working that quickly to process and discharge children who had been brought over illegally by coyotes, etc. And then, as it comes out from two separate stories now, New York Times and then another one, another media entity, that there's a major problem now with child trafficking. Surprise, Xavier Becerra is like tops in that. He's like a regular old, he's like Epstein, but legitimized by the Bidens. And it's not an exaggeration, but I keep seeing these stories. So now Biden is threatening because you have Beto saying, oh, he's got blood on his hands. Abbott wasn't the one who brought any of these children or people over here. He's not the one that empowered the cartels. He's not the one that did any of this. So the people that actually created the situation don't get to tell everyone else that opposed their creation of the situation that they somehow bear some sort of responsibility for it. We're not playing that game. And why does anyone want to go to Bader O'Rourke? Like, who sits there and scrapes the bottom of that outdoor crap house to get him to come on? Like, who does that? This guy has never won an election in his life. He's a Nepo baby. He should have gone to jail, but his dad saved him because his dad was a judge. You know, his wife's family's got money. He never really worked a day in his life. He was in a band, a horrible band. And he likes to say he's a millennial, but he's like two or three years older than me. You're Gen X, you stupid moron. You're not a millennial. Shut up. We're Gen X. He likes to try to make himself appear younger. And then remember after he lost, what race was it that he lost? Like his second or third? I don't even remember anymore. He had to go on a road trip and find himself. And he left the kids with his wife and just took off. Is that supposed to endear? I thought the third wave feminist wanted like a total beta dude that like actually was the one who vacuumed and did all that stuff, right? Like those commercials were showing. I don't know. But I don't know what this guy does. Nobody knows what he does. He doesn't have a job. He doesn't do anything. Every now and then MSNBC trots him out because he's one of the only Democrats that's dumb enough to say anything. He's so thirsty for attention. He's never going to win a race. He didn't even come close to winning the race for governor. I mean, please. So he's, after this, the Biden administration, they're demanding, because you know those floating barriers that are in the Rio, right? To act as a force multiplier to prevent. And they're all on parts of the Rio where there's either a lot of traffic coming across the border from illegal entrances, or it's shallow enough where, you know, they put these barriers up as a force multiplier, you know, because Biden's not doing anything to secure the border. And now the Justice Department is threatening to sue Abbott if those floating barriers are not removed. And they're particularly looking at Eagle Pass, Texas, because that's apparently the only place where the media will go. Now, apparently he's got till 1 p.m. today to remove them, or they're going to file legal action. So they have these where the parts of the river where it's the biggest issue, particularly around Eagle Pass, that's where these barriers have been put up to deter illegal crossings since the Biden administration hasn't done it. They funneled people through with that, CBP1 app is what they use to funnel them through. So the Department of Justice is demanding the removal of these barriers. And then the DOJ said, oh, if you don't do it, we're going to sue you. I think as far as I'm concerned, this is an Alamo San Jacinto moment. Texas has, and as Abbott said, he tweeted, Texas has sovereign authority to defend our border under the U.S. Constitution and Texas Constitution. He said, we've sent the Biden administration numerous letters detailing our authority, including the one I hand-delivered to Biden earlier this year. He says his open border policies are encouraging people to risk their lives, and he's right. They're traveling illegally through the Rio instead of safely and legally over the bridge, and then coming through and then trying to see if you can, you know, legally, you know, get on the list and all that. The thing is that, so he says, we'll see you in court. I think if Biden wants these damn things down, he needs to send force to remove them his damn self. That is, if he can even get near the Rio. Texas taxpayers, we are tired of footing the bill for sanctuary state grifters. We are tired of acting like the welfare fund for the people in Martha's Vineyard. We're tired of acting like the welfare fund for the people in New York, for the people in California, for all of the people who are like, we are a sanctuary state. And they say it, and they run entire campaigns on it, and they fundraise off of it, and they do whatever they can to improve their own status and public perception. But they actually don't follow through. They're not really providing sanctuary. I mean, when they were tested on providing sanctuary, they call National Guard, something they don't allow to happen at the border in overrun border towns. No, they think that small border towns and Texas residents somehow, well, you'll foot the bill, not us. That right there, that is limousine liberal activism. You have these people on the left that say these, they act like they're so compassionate. It's so easy to be compassionate with other people's resources, isn't it? Like Thatcher said, it's so easy to be generous with other people's money. It is. It's so easy. It's so easy to say, yes, we're a sanctuary state, but everyone else has to pay for us to make this claim. And that's what this is. So, no, we're tired of footing this bill. Abbott said, we'll see you in court, but he also should say, if you want this barrier removed, then you can get your Northeastern A double snakes down here and you can try to remove it yourself and see how that goes. Because I'm done. This is a massive problem. I'm completely fine with standing ground on that issue. And it's about time. And this needs to not go the way the Jan Brewer in Arizona did, because the Obama DOJ went after her and they tied her hands up, et cetera, et cetera. It was crazy. But this is insane. And just stop your open border policy. And guess what? Fewer people will try to cross. I mean, it's not difficult. I love the people who see this and they go, well, maybe we should do something about the bigger issue. What do you mean bigger issue? What do you mean we do? So what is the bigger? Identify the bigger issue. Well, people are coming here illegally. Okay, and? Wait a minute, hold up. I work my ass off. I pay taxes. Y'all pay taxes. You know, theft. You know, really, it's government-sanctioned theft. We do all of this stuff. We are good citizens. You know, we work in our, try to add value to our communities. We help out. Since when are we responsible for something that happens down, like, I don't know, say in Colombia or Venezuela or anywhere else? Yes, I understand that there are corrupt governments down there, but at the same time, every corrupt government is not my responsibility. I understand that progressives live in this kitten and sunshine world, and they sit here and they complain all endlessly about the United States acting like the police of the world. But then when they want the police of the world, what do? They want the United States to go down and police everything. Fix this government. Fix that government. How dare you, nation build? But go fix Venezuela. Go fix this country. How dare you, nation build? Don't do that. Make up your damn mind. Pick a narrative. It's not our responsibility to fix everybody else, but it is our responsibility to keep our people safe. And that whole response presupposes that if you fix that government, then it will stop. And it presupposes that any other government issues can be fixed. These are both lies that have gone on. This has been a problem. This has been a lie told and a lie disproven since before I was alive. Going even further, back to Iran-Contra, everything else. Good heavens. I mean, all of it. No, the issue is we keep our border closed. Because notice, there are other nations that do not have this problem. Yet, they are near where some of these other corrupt nations are. But they're not suffering the same issues. I wonder why. Could it be that they have stronger immigration laws? Stronger policies? We're going to talk more about this because really, you know how we have come and take it? Well, come and make us. That barrier stays up there. And by damn Abbott, better not move it.
Catch the Dana Show noon to 3 p.m. Eastern on DirecTV Channel 347.
Like sands through the hourglass, so are the days of the United States.
If you're cis, I want you to message the trans person in your life and ask them, what is one thing that you can do to lighten their load this week? Whether that be grocery shopping, folding laundry, doing dishes. Ask the trans people in your life if there's a task or something that you can offer them to help with the burden that we're carrying, because we're having to deal with all of this stuff right now while having to deal with all of the life
stuff. It's a trans activist who says cis people should do errands and give money to trans people to help with the burden of life. You want welfare. And I hate the word cis people. Cis is a slur. It's a slur. There's no cis nothing. You're a dude or a chick. That's it. There's no cis. We're not doing that. But they're talking about welfare. Also, like, watch a makeup tutorial, like, for real. Like, if you can get on TikTok and you can do a video, then, like, surely you can find, like, a makeup tutorial and you can, properly apply this stuff. Good grief. I mean, if you're going to cosplay in woman face, just make an effort. So, what? So, you know, there's a Democrat politician out there who's like, that's a good idea. I like that. It's buying votes. Why don't you just do your own damn errands? Speaking of which, not errands, but the whole trans issue. I had this story. We're going to get into this coming up. This is crazy. There was, where's this at? Scrolling down my, scrolling. This is kind of crazy because there was a story done that gets into trans surgery nightmares. 81% endure pain in the 5 years, sometimes longer, actually usually longer, of the gender change procedures. A third of them are left incontinent. It's because you're not, it's not a reassignment. It's just an imaginative reconfiguring butcher style of your bits. They said, oh, failure rates and post-op problems are only becoming understood now. Are you kidding me? Only now they're becoming understood. So you didn't know if you inverted your, you know, your Frank to make a, you know, a Franken bit, lady bit, that you're going to have problems. You might have some incontinence. You might have some issues there. Really? You didn't think that that's going to happen? Good heavens. It's they said it's one of the first studies. This is what gets me. One of the first studies. So bear in mind that you have these so-called medical professionals that have just been running willfully headfirst into this whole craze of quote-unquote gender change procedures. You're not changing gender. You're mutilating yourself. Your gender's still the same. But they run headfirst into this without any studies. No studies. There's no study on what happens when younger people abuse hormones like this, what this does to their bodies. There's no this is the first study. How are you doing? Do you realize, for instance, like the folks over at Superbeats, do you realize like all of the stuff that they have to go through with FDA just to even get on the market? It takes years and years and years and years. It is exorbitantly expensive. There's so much bureaucracy there. You have to have so much testing done. You have to submit, you know, the results and everything else, your methodology, all this. I mean, it is like a big, giant process. That's literally with a chewable supplement. No joke. But with this, well, no. We don't have any studies showing what kind of long-term impacts impact exists. We don't have any studies of any kind of like post-op. We don't know. They don't even know what hormones have done to women who have been prescribed additional hormones since like the 80s for menopause. They don't even know. I had a great aunt that ended up, apparently some of the hormone treatment that she was on for her menopause actually exacerbated cancer or like contributed to her manifestation of cancer. They don't even fully understand this stuff. That's terrifying. They keep saying that colon cancer is going to be the big thing. That's the big thing that's going to be affecting everyone is colon cancer. And there's been like an explosion of cases. You're going to see something associated with this too. It's coming and it's going to be horrible because they have no idea what they're walking into. This isn't science. This is witch doctor stuff. This is nothing. We got a lot more on the way. Second hour coming up. Stick with us. Welcome to the program. Your lovable curmudgeon, Dana Loesch, with you. Top of the second hour on Monday. You can listen coast to coast. You can stream the program as well on YouTube, Facebook, Channel 347, DirecTV for the simulcast. Now, a couple of things, and this dovetails into financial, specifically payment processes. It's kind of weird to think about that, but I'll explain. So first and foremost, this is how it starts. You might not be on Twitter, but Kane and I are tinfoil hat discussing some reasons why the timing of this rebranding of Twitter has taken place. So Elon Musk renamed Twitter X, right? Part of me is actually, I like the rebranding because I think Twitter is, people are too focused on it. I think the influence is exaggerated and I'm completely here for the disruption. Now, Linda Yaccarino, who is the CEO of Twitter, had these really weird, it's like these tweets where she was explaining the rebranding. She said, quote, X is the future state of unlimited interactivity centered in audio, video, messaging, payments and banking, creating a global marketplace for ideas, goods, services and opportunities powered by AI. X will connect us in all the ways we were just beginning to imagine. So X is the social media aspect of it because Musk wants to create an everything app, a very powerful everything app, one app that rules them all. Wow, that sounds familiar, doesn't it? I think I've seen some movies about this that involve some hobbits. Actually, can't say hobbit because Peter Dinklage just ruined all of their professional opportunities. So the X everything app, she says that people have pushed Twitter to dream bigger. She said that we're seeing X take shape. Over the past 8 months through rapid relaunches. She said there's no limit to the transformation. I just want to come back. I don't mean to sound like Charlie Day, but give me a minute. I just want to come back to the payments and banking part because she says that Twitter made a massive change. Now X is going further, transforming the global town square. So she describes it as unlimited interactivity centered in audio, video, messaging, payments, banking, which will create a global marketplace for ideas, goods, services, and opportunities powered by AI. Okay, I am immediately, no. Why does it, payments and banking? Does that give anybody else pause? I mean, you know, in China, if you engage in wrong speak, you literally can't even get aboard a train. You literally cannot get into a train, onto a taxi, rent a bike. You can't do anything. You are excommunicado. And they know. Is that... It seems like it's kind of similar in format. Now you can say, well, it won't be used like that here. Oh, you really have that much faith in everybody? Because I don't. I don't know. Does that make you feel weird? Am I overthinking this? Because I'm immediately like that and then powered by AI. What?
Yeah, that's the biggest thing there.
Especially when Democrats could still be the people who create the regulation for AI if we don't win 2024. Because losing 2024 means a lot more than what you think it means. There's a lot of stuff that will irrevocably change. It's the last exit on the highway. That's why I don't want to gamble it on ego. But is that, like, I'm not being too Chicken Little, right? I just think that there's a legitimate reason to be suspicious of this. How does that work even? I just don't want it tied to, and what's a global town square? What is that? What is a global town square? I don't even like the town square that we have. I don't want more people in there. What does that mean? I don't know. I don't know. I like the disruption of Twitter, but I don't know. Cain was saying that the FedNow payment, you think that the timing is because of FedNow is what you were suggesting.
I think so. I think that they're testing everything now, and they're going to be issuing some sort of payment system exclusively on the app. I mean, that's what X.com, I think, in the beginning was all about. So I'm not surprised to see it happen right after the FedNow thing started Friday.
But that would suggest that he's involved in it.
Well, he's taking advantage of it. I don't know
taking
how
advantage of it. Whether or not he's involved in the cabal is another.
But once they issue the CBDCs, they're going to control they can control every aspect of how your money is spent and distributed.
I don't like that. I mean, I saw a story about how Nigel Farage, didn't he just get... Hang on, let me pull this up. He's over in UK. He was part of the, one of the parties over there. For super conservative. He's like a hyper conservative over there. He ended up getting a 3 days ago, BBC, he said he got an apology from the banking boss because he ended up having one of his accounts closed. He had his bank account closed. UKIP is the party, because the bank did not agree with his political views. And so the boss of the NatWest group, which runs that bank, actually came out with an apology. And they said that as well as apologizing to Mr. Farage, they were commissioning a full review of their bank processes, their processes, et cetera, et cetera. It's a private bank owned by NatWest group. She was like, I believe freedom of expression, et cetera, et cetera. But he was told, and that's what happened, he said that his account was closed and there were comments made about him in a document on his suitability as a bank customer. So it's not unrealistic to think, now they're apologizing that, but the damage was already done. They closed his account. And then everything else has to be, you know, you have to like work to restore things. So what assurances do we have that wouldn't happen here? I mean, that's the problem. I don't like the consolidation of things like this because it doesn't there's no competition for people. And you can say, well, so other people can start a platform. It is incredibly difficult, though. And we saw that, you know, previously before Twitter was sold, the challenges, you know, there's all these, you know, what was the app? Was it Parler? They ended up getting dropped by the Amazon Web Services, and they were dropped by, you know, a couple of things, and they had their stuff all jacked with. And it just was kind of galling people who don't realize the amount of effort that it takes to launch something like this. And then the politics that you have to play with all the other entities that have to provide third-party services, it's a very big deal. It's very, very difficult. I don't like the consolidation of stuff like this. I don't think that social media should have any association with banking or finances. It has nothing to do with it. Are humans so damn lazy that we need to go one place for everything? I mean, we're turning into those giant, morbidly obese people that sit in floating loungers in the ship in Wally. We're turning into that. I don't like this kind of stuff. I like things broken up and separate. I like keeping all that stuff separate. To me, I just get bad vibes with this. And it's no wonder. I mean, look at all of the ways that we have seen institutions weaponized to abuse individuals who engage in wrong think. They're on the wrong side ideologically. They have the wrong letter after their name politically. just look at how these institutions have been weaponized to abuse people over the past just decade. I mean, it goes back longer than that, but particularly hyper-radicalized over the past decade. And as Kane said, now imagine if AI gets control after the CBDCs get implemented. AI. So in the election in 2024, if Democrats end up controlling everything still, they're going to be the ones that write the laws on AI, governing AI. Do you trust that? That's why I'm like, I don't care. People get into the primary. I'm going to say it. This has nothing to do with liking a particular candidate or not. Looking at it on its face. And I need everyone to stop the tribalism for a second. Stop the tribalism for a hot second. Because that's not who we are. Like, we literally fought a war to not have, like, monarchs and all this stuff, right? Like, we just celebrated that. We just, you know, fireworks and all this stuff just, like, you know, earlier this month. One of the things you have to realize, and I don't care how much you like Trump or not, and I'm not going to tell you not to vote for him or to vote for him, but one of the things you have to realize is you are immediately forfeiting 8 years. That's if he wins, the general. You only get 4. Think about that. Democrats can wait. That's 8 years that you're kissing goodbye for 4. That is one of the biggest things to me. That's just reality. You're forfeiting 8 years. You only get 4. That's it. And we didn't get a wall in the last 4 years. So I'm just saying. That's one thing to think about. Because I'm thinking about this with the in the context of Democrats and regulation and AI. And the more I read about AI and the more I read, like, Democrats are now talking more and more about how they would like to regulate and what laws they would like to write. That's kind of terrifying. And I'm going to tell you, don't think that people like Musk and others are going to be able to be powerful enough to stop them or to rewrite that. They're just not. I mean, they're out of spite. And this is one thing that people don't realize about the left. They will do something out of spite. There are very few people, because it's so hyper tribal, very few people will do things for the good of the nation anymore. Honestly, I don't really believe that anybody's acting for the good of the nation. I think there maybe is a handful of people. I really do believe that. I believe that most people are acting in their own best interest, and in their own best interest are served by having a healthy nation. And that's kind of a secondary concern. It's true. I know. I'm really cynical today. I don't mean to bring everybody down. Like, here, let me. You want me to talk about Snow White? Let's talk about Snow White. Let's listen to this soundbite. Let's do that. Yeah. Let's talk about Snow White and her collection of assorted, varying height friends. This is audio soundbite 19. So this is the chick who is going to be playing Snow White, Rachel Zegler. She was in West Side Story, the remake of West Side Story. So she was asked about Snow White on the red carpet. Let's see if this improves our mood.
You said you were bringing a modern edge to it on stage. What do you mean by that?
I just mean that it's no longer 1937, and we absolutely wrote a Snow White that
is not going to be saved by the prince.
She's not going to be saved by the prince, and she's not going to be dreaming about true love. She's dreaming about becoming the leader she knows she can be, and the leader that her late father told her that she could be if she was fearless, fair, brave, and true. And so it's just a really incredible story for, I think, young people everywhere to see themselves
in. I'm so tired of that.
Snow White is running for president.
I'm launching my campaign.
Like, she's not going to be saved by a prince. Well, then that's not the story.
Yep. Different story altogether.
You realize then you're appropriating a Germanic tale and repurposing it for woke scold. Are you, like, so uncreative that you can't come up with your own story? If you want to write about a princess who is with a bunch of assorted height individuals and there's no prince involved, then write a different story. But this is appropriation and bastardization. This isn't a retelling. It's appropriation and butchering a story. I mean, we can you imagine if people did this to Milan? No. Why? It's an insult to the original work, and it is appropriation. But apparently that's like a one-way street. I didn't realize that. But just make your own thing. There are so many other stories out there from so many other cultures that would be it would be great original content, but everyone wants to keep redoing the same thing. She's not going to be saved by the prince. What does that mean? What does that even mean? And so the seven dwarves are apparently just like magical people. That's also a ridiculous look. Canonically, dwarves were the mountain dwellers and the amazing miners and the ridiculously talented engineers. And apparently they're very popular with Gen Z, like more so than elves. You'd think elves would be popular, but it's dwarves. I mean, they're like they have everybody's favorite characters. I mean, there's a reason why they're selected, and it's they're steeped in lore in this in Germanic fairy tales. And that's what this was. So it's like, you're not, then don't call it Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, because it's not. Don't call it Snow White at all. I mean, it was a story where she was rescued by a prince. If you don't like it, then just do your own thing. I'm just tired of this stuff. I'm not going to go see this. I'm not going to go see Barbie either. I'm not even going to go see Barbie to prove a point. I don't care. I am not going to go sit captive in a theater and watch this stuff. I just can't. If it's not horror, if it's not completely politically incorrect, irreverent comedy, I cannot be prevailed upon. We got a lot more. I thought that was going to improve your mood, but it didn't.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
This was not a headline that I thought I was going to see on Monday. Gimp suit cosplayer crashes Shakespeare's theater and parents are livid. Theatergoers were scandalized after a man clad head to toe in a latex gimp suit was allowed to watch a production at Shakespeare's Globe in London, surrounded by children. The backlash, though, the theater says, the incident took place it was a matinee of the Bards, the Comedy of Errors, when the man, who they have not identified, he bought a ticket to stand in the theater's yard right in front of the stage. So following a performance, an angry audience member said they were shocked to see this and that he was allowed to stay. I mean, he was in black latex the entire time in a gimp suit. And the Post New York Post reached out to the Globe for a comment. And they said that even if a kid doesn't know what the suit is or the connotations of it, it's still a really creepy thing. They said the nature of it was incredibly offensive. I mean, golly, that is... And aren't they having a heat wave? That was the other question I thought. Like, wouldn't that be very uncomfortable to wear? I mean, it was just my other thought. Also, box office opening weekends. I think it's, what, Oppenheimer and Barbie had a bonkers $260 million combined opening weekend. It is kind of interesting that these two types of movies are released at the exact same time. It is a little... Okay. This, apparently, it's too hot for EVs to work properly. And we know that they don't really perform that well when it's super cold outside. But according to Automotive News, the heat waves across much of southern and western U.S. has really brought this range issue to the forefront. A Seattle-based EV battery and range analytics company called Recurrent reportedly tested thousands of vehicles in weather conditions, and they found that vehicles experienced significant declines in their range as temperatures rose. Yeah, well, we could have told you that. Stick with us. We got a lot more in store. More of The Dana Show back after this.
Between Twitter, Facebook, or any of your social media, there's a lot of information out there. That's why your lovable curmudgeon is here to help you make sense of it all, live or on demand. The Dana Show.
And again, the good news is all around my state, I can't turn over a rock without seeing new jobs associated with clean aviation fuel, with new types of batteries. It's very exciting what's going on right now in inventing a new economy. And we're doing that right in Washington State, and people are getting great jobs because of this. So there's two parts to this story. This thing is now the age of consequences. The bomb has gone off, but we do have the ability to restrain fossil fuels if we make the commitments we need to. And I'm glad
and
that
Governor,
the state...
So that's Jay Inslee. He was saying that, guys, the record high temperatures across the world show that climate change, the bomb has gone off. I mean, let's see what the temperature is here. Oh my gosh, it's 97 degrees. I mean, what could you attribute this to? It's not, shut up, Siri, you stupid witch. What could you attribute this to? 97 degrees. Like, she talks and I don't even ask her. Like, shut up, no one asked you. Make me a sandwich. 97 degrees. Kane, it means that we're going to die. It's climate change. It's 97 degrees in Texas right now.
The only explanation.
That is the only explanation. Mm-hmm.
Not
You're
summer.
Right.
It's not summer or anything.
No, it's not summer. Mm-mm. Could not at all be summer. At all. Not at all. It's like, are they aliens? Like, have they never been here when there's a summer? For real. Like, where do these people come from? My gosh, can you believe how hot it is? So hot outside. Must be climate change. It's July. It's not climate change. It's July. Big difference. Golly. Let me get into some of this stuff because I saw this over the weekend. This is actually pretty, you know, because he was talking about the batteries. And I thought that, did you hear that one little key line that he had, that Inslee had there, where he said that it's creating a new industry? Inventing a new industry. Interesting. There was a fight here. There's been a fight over a lithium mine. Now let me throw this up for you. So there's a lithium mining project in Nevada. And remember how I was saying that we don't really have any rare earth element mines and things of that nature, which is true. You know, when it's very difficult to get anything off the ground. What is some of the difficulty in getting it off the ground, you might ask? Well, let me explain. So there's this lithium mining project in Western Nevada, and they've been having a brawl for some time. You have two indigenous nations. One includes the Western Shoshone tribe. And there's the border of Nevada and Oregon, and they have been fighting to stop this project for a lithium mine. They say that it's ancestral lands because there were people massacred there in the 1800s, and they said that they have some, they're working with environmentalists. And, do you honestly believe that they cared at all about what is a bird called the sage grouse? Because I don't. But suddenly they're like, oh, and also the sage grouse. Sounds like good eating. But the Ninth Circuit heard the court, right? Or heard the case, right? The Ninth Circuit. Ninth Circuit, that's a super liberal court. I mean, we've gotten some pretty stupid decisions out of the Ninth Circuit. Yeah, well, they lost their case. The environmentalists and the indigenous activists lost their case. According to this, I'm going to pull this story up here. This is AP. The latest bid by conservationists and tribal leaders to block construction of a huge lithium mine. Now, construction of the mine. Guys, we're not even talking about like mining. We're just talking about building the mine. The latest bid by conservationists and tribal leaders to block construction of a huge lithium mine already in the works along the Nevada-Oregon line was denied by the U.S. Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. Three-panel judge of the San Francisco-based appellate court. They rejected all these legal arguments. They've been fighting for 2 years now. It's going to be the length of a football field. And they said, oh, it's a sacred land. It's this, it's that. So they lost this bid, right? And they've been wanting to put that there for forever. Now, what gets me is that wasn't that the whole idea of the sacred lands, all that other stuff, that was used as the argument against the Keystone XL pipeline. But that didn't work here because it's a lithium mine. I mean, they're building batteries. Them EVs that Joe wants everybody to drive. That's going to be powered by minerals that are sourced mainly in China. Okay. The sage grouse. What? This is apparently a very... I don't even know what the hell this thing is. Let me look. Sage grouse. This thing? This is a proud little bird that has two yellow egg yolks right on its head. It is, or its chest. It is a real weird looking bird. Google that bird. That's a weird looking bird. I bet it's tasty, though. It looks like a little general. It's weird. Anyway, this is the sage grouse. It's a protected little bird. And you normally, if you like even look at a protected animal the wrong way, like conservation shows up or Department of Fish and something show up and get you. Anyway, so I just want to pause here for a moment because this was the Lithium Nevada Corporation. It is an open pit mine. It is as deep as a football field is long. And it's going to be going on some land where indigenous people have some of their ancestors buried. So who cares? Because it's a lithium mine. But the Keystone XL pipeline, now that's something different. You know why it's different? Because one is EVs and one is oil and gas. That's why. That's the only difference. This is some hypocrisy. Now, wait a minute. There's more. With the purchase of one sage grouse, So you have this project, right? So there was a Canadian mining company, Rover Metals, that gained some approval from U.S. federal government to go outside of the Ash Meadows National Wildlife Refuge. And they were going to look for lithium, you know, outside of this refuge. So the U.S. pulled a plug on authorization for lithium exploration to this wildlife refuge, next to this wildlife refuge in Nevada. And they were looking at an environmental impact on endangered species. Now, this is pretty far from the one that we were just talking about. But there had already been all this stuff invested in the land. You have Bureau of Land Management that approved it. And then Bureau of Land Management went back and said, oh, the earlier acceptance, it was an error. We made a mistake. We didn't mean to actually accept it. So they accepted the proposal from Rover Metals, and they were going, they were going to look at some deep mining shafts. They invested a lot of stuff into the project. And then BLM, Bureau, not Black Lives Matter, the other BLM, Bureau of Land Management, not that they're any better. They came back and said, oh no, our acceptance of your proposal and our notice to you to go ahead and proceed was made an error. So they screwed up. Rover Metals didn't screw up. Bureau of Land Management screwed up. And that's, oh my gosh. Now, this is all part of the whole EV fight. And I want you to notice that you have in this administration, they talk about moving everybody to EV, transitioning to everybody to electric, alternative energy, right? That's all they talk about. Have they done anything to actually make that easier? Let's just, for the sake of this argument, have they done anything to make that easier? Have they removed any of the bureaucracy? Do you realize how long they've been fighting over this? My friend Jess Shaw had a story about Thacker Pass. They have a delicate water table. And yeah, there's that damn sage grouse. Oh, and then there's this fish called the Alvord Chub. I am literally made of jokes right now. Let's try to get through this segment. The Alvord Chub. You know what this fish looks like? It's a tiny little fish. It looks like all the other fish. It's a fish. Oh my gosh, the Alvord Chub. Look, don't get me wrong. I love I like conservation. Environmentalism is a religion. Conservation is an action. I like conservation, but this is real stupid. This is getting dumb, right? Oh, the Alvord Chub. It's only in a handful of small waterways along the border between Nevada and Oregon. Oh my gosh, they're going to start strip mining for lithium near the Alvord Chub. So they have, why was the other ones approved and this one, I mean, the Thacker Pass apparently gets approved. Biden apparently, and this is what Jess Shaw wrote about, Biden had personally endorsed the Thacker Pass mine and highlighted it as part of his transition to green energy and EVs. So it's all about how much Democrats are involved. And it doesn't, I mean, if it's for Biden and Democrats' EV push, then it's accepted. Then it's accepted. So this is the problem that we have. This is the problem that we have. This is why we cannot take any of this seriously. Biden, like, they play winners and they pick winners and losers with this stuff. Like, the Thacker Pass is greenlit. This other one's not greenlit. This one's going to be greenlit. That's oil and gas, so it has to, it can't. This is not a serious energy strategy. This is picking winners and losers based upon how best it serves your either agenda for influence and favor in polling or how much money you can make off of it. I mean, this is crazy.
So they're not for protecting the environment, the EPA.
No.
That's not what they're there for.
No, you mean the same EPA that dropped all that crud in the Animas River and poisoned all that cattle? You know, because that was, you know, it's a lot of indigenous farmland. They like indigenous nations until they don't like indigenous nations. But that's been par for the course for Democrats all throughout American history, hasn't it? That's rhetorical. We have a lot more to hit. I mean, I could talk about this because I'm gonna dovetail this into another energy and economic story because this is one of the reasons why we have such a hard time in the United States. Like, I don't even think that we need to be doing this. I think that this is, you know, if you want to mine for rare earth elements, fine. But the bureaucracy is so bad because it's actually a lot more, it's more dangerous. There's like carcinogenic elements involved. There's all kinds of stuff. It's not anywhere near as clean as the extraction of oil and gas. Nowhere near as clean as those extraction methods, which is why I always, you know, people who don't like coal mining, they don't like fracking, but like stripping for lithium is okay, or cobalt is okay. I mean, go and compare the mines and you tell me which is more environmentally friendly. It's the dumbest thing. It's the dumbest argument. These people have no idea what they're talking about. They glom on to trends. This has nothing to do with energy. It has nothing to do with conservation. It's virtue signaling at the expense of a number of issues. And then this administration is they're making hand over fist cash. The First Family, this is one of the things they're making money off of, is this whole green agenda. We got more on this. We're also going to touch on one of the stories that no one's really talking about yet. There could be a massive strike that could impact supply chain, and not enough people are talking about it. And a decision has to be made with UPS by August 1st. This is days away.
It's his life mission to make bad decisions. It's time for Florida Man.
All right, so let's see what our friend Florida Man has been doing. I'm going to get into the Kamala Harris thing, which is a Florida issue, but I'm going to get into that whole thing with what they're teaching kids in school in a separate segment. All right, so Fox 35 Orlando, a Florida restaurant closes after 7 customers alleged they tested positive for meth. That's methed up after eating there. It was at a Japanese steakhouse, a hibachi restaurant in Pensacola. Apparently, they said that it was going to permanently close. The Santa Rosa Sheriff's Department got involved. They said 2 groups of people who had eaten at the restaurant reported feeling drugged after they ate there, and they tested, and they actually were exposed to meth. One of them included a 12-year-old. Okay, I am made of questions. They never actually got into, they said that they had sweaty, chest pounding, confusion, teeth pain, jaw pain, seen shadows, all of this. They were up all night. They took an at-home drug test and it tested positive for meth. And then they went to the hospital and they tested leftovers, fried rice and chicken. And that's what tested presumptive positive for meth. And then a deputy heard the group when they were at the hospital. Deputy happened to be there. And they heard from the other group that showed up. This is crazy. So obviously they went to investigate. Fresh rice that was in a dumpster behind the restaurant was tested and that came back negative. But they were testing soy bottles. The soy packets and soy bottles tested presumptive positive for meth. Is that not weird? Golly, I'm made of questions about this. But the 12-year-old, that's a terrifying thing. That is a terrifying thing. Let's see. Okay, I'm trying to figure out this lady. A Miami woman, 18 years old, was arrested after allegedly trying to hire a hitman to kill her 3-year-old son. Jasmine Paez, 18, of Miami, is charged with first-degree solicitation of murder, 3rd-degree using a communications device for unlawful use. Investigators said they were contacted Tuesday by a man who operates a fake hire an assassin website. Did she literally Google hire an assassin? I bet she did. How much you bet she did? Genius. For your 3-year-old. So they traced it to her. Investigators posed as the hired hitman. She agreed to pay $3,000. They went to her home and arrested her. I just wonder, she bonded out of jail. I just want to know what's happening with the 3-year-old. The story doesn't say. Please tell me that this child was placed with somebody that's not. What is wrong with people? This is just such a sad story. I would like to allegedly hire a hitman to allegedly beat her up, allegedly badly, or myself, do it myself, allegedly. So this, you know, because it's all allegedly. Mm-hmm. So we, I'm not going to read this one. Let me do this one. This son gets life sentence. What is wrong? This is also a horrible story. A twisted son gets life sentence for strapping his dad to a barbecue and then tossing him off the side of a boat. 54-year-old man in Florida. Life sentence. I mean, I don't want to say points for creativity, but he tied the body to a propane grill, threw it over the side of a pontoon boat. Robert Remus Sr. murdered his dad so he could take control of finances and party, basically. I'm just looking at the guy's mugshot. He strangled his dad and strapped him to the barbecue. So, yeah, he was arrested. I'm just looking at the guy's mugshot. I think, you maybe partied a little too much. I'm just saying. Stick with us. We got another hour in store.
Something else. But in a political context, you can never admit that you've made a misstep. And more importantly, I think for DeSantis, he doesn't want to back down from something that goes with his brand, which is we are going to push back against all these efforts to promote diversity and inclusion. And we want to sanitize our history.
That's not even at all. This is so ridiculous. Welcome back to the program. Dana Loesch here with you. Top of this third hour on Monday. And this is just some of Sam Stein going on the teaching of Black history in Florida. And that's been like the latest attack on what parents, because this, it has nothing to do with Black history. They were rejecting teaching kids inappropriate, like, I didn't even want to like get into what some of it was. I went and read it, what parents were objecting to. Remember when they were trying to adopt, what was it, queer theory and all of this stuff? What does that have to do with Black history? And also, that's a complete lie because it's already, I mean, Florida actually has it in there. It's law that they teach everything Black history. They teach Jim Crow. They teach everything that happened. So this accusation is ignorant of Florida law. And this goes through with what Kamala Harris had said. And I think we have this audio of her. I sent it over the weekend where she had gone off on this. And I put this, it should be an audio somewhere. But it was, unless it didn't send. But there was audio of her out there where she was bizarrely making this accusation. And it was her, and there were several. You have Stacey Plaskett and all these other people. It was Kamala Harris that had gone out there, and she had made remarks. This is where all this came from, where she was attacking Florida's curriculum. And it's, I mean, she was not being honest about it. She was lying about it. Listen to this. This was the soundbite.
Adults know what slavery really involved. It involved rape. It involved torture. It involved taking a baby from their mother. So in the context of that, how is it that anyone could suggest that in the midst of these atrocities, that there was any benefit to being subjected to this level of dehumanization? In the midst of these atrocities,
why is she
that there was like, some benefit.
Man, her voice, ugh, it's like a spear. She's lying, though.
Yep.
She's lying. Completely. She visited Florida, and she was blasting efforts in states to ban books and push a revisionist history. That's what she was alleging. And she said, her quote was, "Yet just yesterday in the state of Florida, they decided middle school students will be taught that enslaved people benefited from slavery." That was her actual quote, which is so not even remotely true. It is malicious. Shame on her. Shame on her. It's already law, and this was passed some time ago. There was already law. It's already law that this is taught in Florida schools, the history of slavery and Black history, all of this stuff. That's already mandated. And what she's saying is not even in anywhere represented in the curriculum. And there's a couple of really good pieces on this. Charles Cook has a really exhaustive piece because there's literally no reference in the curriculum to justify her claim. It doesn't whitewash slavery. It doesn't do anything like that. I mean, there are entire sections on, for instance, living conditions of slaves in British North American colonies, the Caribbean, Central America, South America, including infant mortality rates. There's a whole section on the conditions during passage. There's a section on how, Democrats in the South, they were trying to prevent slaves from escaping in their efforts to end the Underground Railroad. It gets into the overwhelming death rates caused by that practice. It discusses all of the ways that slavery was resisted, the ramifications of prejudice, racism, stereotyping on individual freedoms. I mean, it gets into everything. There is literally no instruction in here that teaches that. None. At all. Like I said, there were a couple of really good, there are a couple of educators that wrote some really good pieces. Charles Cook looked at the whole list of every section in the curriculum, poured through the curriculum, and there's nothing in there that encourages that at all. I mean, at all. So I have no idea where Kamala Harris is getting her information. I mean, to say that it's somehow presented as beneficial, that is no. I mean, it gets into the history and evolution of slave codes, revolts that happened in early colonial America, African patriots during the Revolutionary Era, which, you know, Crispus Attucks, by the way, was the first person to die in the Revolutionary War. Everybody, I mean, it gets into everything. The first Rhode Island Regiment, it analyzes the events that involved or affected Africans from the founding of the nation through Reconstruction. It gets into the congressional actions. It explains the effect of different industries on the expansion of slavery, like the cotton gin, the cotton industry, all of this. It gets into every, the instruction includes the skills in which people were forced to develop in order to serve that industry. That's like the closest thing that you could even get to what she said. Now you tell me how what I just said in any way is representative of her accusation. Talking about skills that people, that slaves were forced to develop to benefit those industries? Are you kidding me? And she bastardizes this and tries to... What was her quote? What was her quote, Kane? That somehow enslaved people benefited from slavery? That was her quote? That's the only thing. And that's not even... People forced to develop skills to benefit the industry, whether it's cotton or what... To benefit specifically that... How does... What? It is so malicious. It's absolutely shameful. There's no excuse for the second highest office in the land, the second highest office holder in the land, to be this ignorant of American history, and also to push something that's so maliciously false with the purpose of inciting further division. We have enough problems in politics right now. Enough. I mean, we've got all kinds of insane things. We have the whole situation, for instance, Hunter Biden. All the felonies he's able to get away with. You know, we're talking about AI regulation. We have an election coming up. We got the first debate coming up next month. Speaking of which, you know, the primary is ongoing. There's some other polling coming out. It's still early. One of the polling I saw, some of the latest data that I saw, Quinnipiac, shows that Trump is in the lead, but the lead is diminishing. His camp would be wise not to take it for granted. And there's some movement by some other folks, too. It's still too early, but as we get rolling in towards next month, I'm going to start looking and I'm going to start pulling the polls that actually do merit and do go towards debate inclusion, and I'm going to start sharing those regularly with you because those are the ones we'll be paying attention to. But I will say this. I thought this was goofy. Y'all remember Eric Greitens? Y'all remember him? He was the disgraced former governor of my home state. He also made the Missouri Capitol, and I've written extensive pieces with tons of receipts. He also made the Missouri Capitol a gun-free zone, reversing years of precedent. He only changed it back after he got hit by backlash. He made it a gun-free zone. He also endorsed Moms Demand Action's attacks on the Second Amendment Preservation Act because he just plagiarized, essentially, their language and used their language to attack the Second Amendment Preservation Act. I know. He's the guy who challenged Marine veteran John Bruner to a fight. He got real mad and he was like unhinged. There's cell phone audio of that. And most importantly, he was such a reckless, undisciplined, sloppy politician that he cost Missourians the governor's mansion. He had to leave, and he cut a deal to leave so he would actually have, from what I understand, charges dropped elsewhere. So he was never actually exonerated. Anyone who says he's exonerated is lying to you, and they should not be trusted. And I've talked about this exhaustively and written about it during the times that all this happened. Now, to that point, he was going to run for Senate. Remember, he was in the primary for Senate a couple of years back, and I have very good friends who are big Trump donors, and they were down at Mar-a-Lago, and they've said that, you know, Greitens was hanging out at Mar-a-Lago all the time, desperately trying to get an endorsement, desperately trying to get something. Like, he was down there 24/7, basically like sleeping outside. I mean, it was nuts. I mean, everybody was talking about this. This was one of the secrets that a lot of the Republicans were whispering about. Like, it's kind of pathetic because he was looked at as a candidate who was so reckless, he actually hurt Republicans and hurt voters. You don't sit here and talk about how much of a hard ass you are when you are so undisciplined, so reckless, and so overly ambitious that it actually works against you and voters' will. And so he ended up, you know, he had to make a sweet deal so he could leave the governor's mansion. Then he decided he was going to wait a couple of years. His marriage fell apart. His wife left him. He's in the middle of this, like, horrible custody thing. I mean, he had an affair. There's all this stuff that came out. And all I'm going to say is that Kane and I know the individuals involved. So all of this, you would think that you would want a clean house and take care of your backyard, right? But nope, he saw another open seat. He decided he wanted to run for the Senate. Unfortunately, he was incredibly unpopular still with a lot of the voting base. He was a liability. He would have lost that seat. It would have been a disastrous loss. And thankfully, the Show Me State voted for Eric Schmidt, and they are being very well served by Eric Schmidt. So now Greitens decides to weigh in again. I guess he's decided he's been quiet enough. So he's kissing up to Steve Bannon, the guy who called Donald Trump Jr. a traitor and led a reporter all throughout Trump's White House to write super unflattering things about the former president and a lot of the aides there. So he decides to retweet, you know, this crappy website and say, oh, DeSantis is done. And for many, myself included, it's not personal. Nobody cares for yourself, not included. Nobody cares what a gun control candidate. And you can do as many ads of other people storming houses and carrying guns for you as you want to. You were a gun control guy. You made Missouri, the capital, a gun-free zone. You used Moms Demands language to attack the Second Amendment Preservation Act. You cost voters the governor's mansion. You're a liability on voters. You're a liability on the Republican Party. You're a liability on victory. And the only person to whom he is not a liability is not, actually, I can't even say himself, because he is his own worst enemy. He's undisciplined. He has a temper problem. He's got a ton of baggage. And there's a lot more stuff out there. So this guy decides to weigh in on the GOP primary. The last person in the world who, if they had any self-awareness, if they had any real humility, would have maybe done a room check, a temperature check first before doing so. And he's sitting here talking about, well, he's the guy the establishment blesses. You mean the guy that created the Tea Party caucus while you were kissing Barack Obama's ass, going with Bob Holden to the DNC? That guy? Because I remember. Y'all remember? I remember. Nobody wanted to know what Eric Greitens had to say, just like nobody wanted to know what Kamala Harris had to say about Florida curriculum. He is the Hunter Biden light of the Republican Party. Nobody asked Eric Greitens what he had to say, and if he was smart, he'd shut up.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
I'm actually getting ready to pick a fight on social media. We'll see how this goes. Okay, all right. Idaho College Town is going to pay $300,000 to Christians who were arrested for an outdoor church service. Remember during the whole, like, public health emergency ordinance and all that stuff? Remember all of that back during the lockdown days? Yeah, there were three churchgoers who were charged with violating the town's stupid public health emergency ordinance during the pandemic. Uh-huh. People didn't understand science, apparently. So they announced the settlement last week via the Idaho State Journal. Italy has banned biological males from beauty pageants. That makes sense because nobody wants to see a dude with some junk in a swimsuit, right? I mean, nobody wants to see that, right? So they said that they banned transgender contestants from participating, saying that all entrants have to be a woman from birth. Which makes sense because it's a beauty competition. So, yeah. Coming up, Stephen Yates joins us. Don't miss.
Whether you just want to stay informed or just hear her vent about all the ridiculousness in the world, make sure to download the Dana Show podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
Or just hear her vent about all the ridiculousness in the world. Make sure to download.
Yeah,
the
I'm like,
Dana
what's
show
playing here in the background? I'm like, we weren't playing something. Welcome to the show. Dana Lash here with you. Bottom of this third hour. And you can listen coast to coast. You can also catch a simulcast on YouTube, Facebook, Channel 347, DirecTV as well. And we've been talking about a number. We've been getting it. Well, we've touched on some of the foreign policy, but we've been talking about the EV stuff. We were talking about those rare earth element mines, particularly the legal fight in Nevada. I saw this article over the weekend. So we have this from Wall Street Journal. U.S. weighs potential deal with China on fentanyl. Now, last week, towards the end of last week, we had the story that came out about China's involvement in the I guess you'd call them extracts, the materials that are used to create opioids, et cetera, and how really, you know, the Mexican cartels are becoming very, very sophisticated and they want to get some more of that money. They're trying to come up with that origin, those origin materials themselves so they don't have to rely on China so much. But China's been, that's really where it's been coming from and then through Mexico. So I saw this. U.S. weighs potential deal with China on fentanyl. Beijing has demanded that the U.S. lift restrictions on a police forensics institute, said by Washington, to have facilitated human rights abuses. So I guess that's the trade? That's the trade-off? Really? Joining us to discuss this, our friend Stephen Yates, senior fellow at America First Policy Institute and chair of the China Policy Initiative. So, Steve, I don't know why. That sounds like a horrible deal to make. First off, I mean, I don't know why we would make, I want to know whose idea that was and why we would even make a deal like that in the first place, that we would lift restrictions on this institute that, I mean, it contributed to human rights abuses. Why, whose idea was this?
Well, I doubt that it'll ever be found. I mean, after all, we did have a powdery substance apparently that no one brought into the White House. And so why would we ever get to the bottom of who actually raise this issue of making a horrible deal on what is a direct attack on American families and communities, one the government of China knows about and is involved in. And the previous administration, when they were involved in the so-called trade war, put some pressure on, and the Chinese did find it in the course of those negotiations in their interest to throttle back mysteriously this thing that they know nothing about from coming to the cartels and across our border and up into the United States for a time. So, in the parlance of the last administration, there are good deals and bad deals. This would be a bad deal. And frankly, I don't even know why we need a deal. Why are we making a deal with people who are poisoning the next generation of youth, subjecting families to catastrophic loss and the powers of addiction? I mean, come on. What's going on here?
Yeah, that's the million-dollar question. It was Secretary of State Antony Blinken, when he was meeting in Beijing last month, Wall Street Journal reported that he was proposing setting up this working group to try to revive, I guess, some of the talks that have stalled about fentanyl. I don't know why, because we went through COVID. We know where that came from. We've had IP stolen. I don't know why we think that there would be any kind of goodwill effort on behalf of the Chinese to stop. Because I would imagine they're making a lot of money from this. They're making a lot of money from that, from fentanyl.
They don't just make money on the fentanyl. They also primarily benefit from the money laundering that is associated with this enterprise, too. So there's just no question that there is knowledge by the government of China of what's going on, that there are ties of corruption. It'll come as a shock to learn in the world's largest communist country there is corruption, and that the people related to the top officials have a little bit of a ladle in that corruption soup. So there's no way you're going to negotiate this away by asking for a dialogue. I mean, for heaven's sake, people think we haven't talked to the Communist Party enough for the last 70 years. It's got to be some other kind of mix. Maybe the great Dr. Kissinger has come back with the miracle formula to help us better understand the Chinese people. You know, a culture that he has never really learned very much about, a language he doesn't speak. But, you know, I guess he's sort of the mind reader in chief.
I saw, too, we're talking with our friend Steve Yates at Yates Comms. You can find him on Twitter. I saw two very competing from the opposite ends headlines here regarding China. First was China sends all, you know, dozen of fighter jets, bombers towards Taiwan. It's something that they've been doing with greater frequency. Then I saw this, too. Facing job scarcity in China, some find work as full-time children. Young people are being shut out of the labor market, burned out. Apparently, this is like, one article described it as an epidemic. They said the jobless rate amongst people ages 16 to 24 was nearly 22% in June, and that's in China. It seems like there's another struggle for them on the horizon that might contribute to maybe perhaps more hesitancy for them to flex in, you know, the South China Sea when they really couldn't sustain such a flex.
Yeah, well, it's very clear evidence that all is not well inside of China. The problem, and for those that aren't up on the maths, that's basically one in four youth that are not seeking or in the job market. That's really high. And that's not a stable foundation for an economy or a polity or a culture. So all is not well. The problem is that when you have a xenophobic, racist, expansionist, authoritarian leader, he might try to pick a fight to kind of fan the flames of nationalism to distract people from the horrors at home. I mean, this is basically what autocrats throughout recent history have done. And so that's probably among the reasons why they don't mind picking a diplomatic fight with the United States, prodding Taiwan, blaming the United States for everything, including the things they're doing to us. So this is a dangerous time, in part because of those structural weaknesses there.
Yeah. Shifting gears and looking a little bit looking towards North Korea, they fired a possible ballistic missile to the Sea of Japan, according to Japanese Defense Ministry. This was just earlier this morning. They seem to do this very, very random. Was this in response to some kind of like military exercise? Because there seems to be no rhyme or reason for them do it. Whenever they do this, it really doesn't seem to. I always wonder why. What's the point?
I think part of it is because they can. I mean, I feel really badly for our allies in Japan. It's not a good day to be at the mercy of quality control in the hermit kingdom of North Korea. There's something or other flying in your direction or over your airspace. It's a test to the alliance. Obviously, there are military exercises that take place in Northeast Asia with great frequency. We have lots of U.S. troops based in that area, and we have joint exercises with allies that take place from time to time. And the North has chosen times to light one off and prove that they can. They have a budding space program, kind of strange. You can't feed your feet people, but you want to shoot for the moon. But there they are. It's odd. In the last, you know, the years of the Trump administration where, you know, apparently everything was horrible, there were fewer of these tests. And so someone needs to go back and look at, is there something we could be doing to manage this risk without rewarding bad people and also stand by our allies with this? And so I don't think the current administration has cracked that code or is even trying. And the North Koreans aren't exactly the world's most rational people. So we're going to have problems there, and only China can bring the weight to make them pause. And we're asking China for meeting. They're not going to go the extra mile to tamp down crazy North Korea as a favor.
Yeah, no, definitely not. That's their fun little attack dog for sure. What do you make of that soldier that ran across the border into North Korea? That is such a weird story. So I watch a lot of South Korea shows. I know that there was like a big one that was based on some woman accidentally like parachuting beyond the DMZ border and all this stuff and beyond DMZ and landing in North Korea and having to get back. I think South Korean programming is wholesome. But anyway, it seems that it's a lot more difficult than just running across the border into North Korea, but apparently that's what the soldier was described as doing. Like, he was up for some sort of disciplinary charge. He was going to be shipped back to Fort Bliss, where he was awaiting more, like another hearing, apparently. So he just was, enough is enough, went into North Korea, and now there could be like a, are they going to suggest like a, an exchange? Like, what do you make of this?
Well, it is a tale from the bazaar. You are correct that South Koreans have mastered drama, and they have some of the world's most beautiful people doing this drama. And everywhere in Asia, they might hate Korean politics, they might have history or whatever else going on, but everyone across Asia is dialing into that South Korean drama. So you're not alone in that regard. But this soldier, obviously something is not right with this individual. And so you, at some level, have empathy for someone whose mind and life is broken to the point where they do something crazy like this. And he cannot possibly be safe. There's no evidence he had access to anything that is of particular value to the North, but they might just like picking away at this poor guy some more. He might have done some really bad things in South Korea for which he was guilty. I don't know. Basically, he seems to have stepped off into the abyss. When people do things like that, I mean, I really don't think we should be going to the nines to give anything up to pull someone who's either crazy or a criminal or some other mixture in that to get them out of the hermit kingdom. That comes at a high cost. And the Warbeer family learned what high cost that can be. It's terrible to think of, but my goodness, this just proves the law of averages. When you have tens of thousands and hundreds of thousands of people, you're going to get some people that are not right in your midst.
Yeah, that's a good point. Very good point. Stephen Yates at YatesComps on Twitter. Always so good to see you. Thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate it. Have a good rest of your week.
Thank you, Dana. Take care.
Of course. You too. Thank you. Yeah, that the Otto Warmbier story. Golly, they still, I was actually reading about that the other day in conjunction with this, and I just could not believe that. When you, because they were saying, oh, it was botulism. Remember, they were trying to blame botulism. He had to be carried. He was comatose. He was out of it. He could blink his eyes, but he really wasn't there. Heartbreaking story. Heartbreaking story. Yeah, this soldier, I don't get that one.
Catch the Dana Show noon to 3 p.m. Eastern on DirecTV Channel 347.
So a couple of things. Welcome back. Dana Lash here with you as we wrap up this third hour. I saw that per James Comer, that Devin Archer, the Burisma board member, he was supposed to be deposed today. He's canceled his deposition. This is via Chad Pergram three times. He's under subpoena from the House Oversight Committee. Now, he apparently canceled because of personal reasons and then schedule conflicts, etc. He was supposed to come in today for his deposition, but that was canceled. So now they're going to try to do it for Thursday. Don't know if he's going to show up and for his deposition on Thursday. And I was talking to Kane on break. I'm like, he's just running this out for the recess. He's running this out for August recess because they're back in until what? Basically next Monday. Monday's the last day, and then they're out for the entire month of August. House is out for month of August, and then they come back September 1st. So they're running the clock down. He's not going to be there Thursday. That's the 27th. They're out. He's going to keep running that clock down. That's what that is. He's not going to show up. Now, some of the things that we have tomorrow. One of the things I wanted to bring up to your attention is this looming strike with UPS. This is a big story because their deadline is 31st or August 1st, excuse me. The president of the Teamsters Union said UPS workers will strike August 1st if they don't have pay negotiations finalized. They rallied over the weekend and 1.2 million members. They said 95% of the contract negotiations were completed, but they're still focusing on some other stuff. They could strike. That's going to be bad because that'll be a supply chain. That'll be a supply chain issue for sure. So, they said those contract talks have broken down so far, but August 1st is that deadline. We're going to talk more about that tomorrow. Also, one narrative that I want you to watch out for, and I saw this bubbling up and developing. This came by. I saw this first couple of different spots here. They're looking at Ohio, and they're saying that, oh, we'll look at the, we'll look what's going on in Ohio with abortion. Oh, that's a bellwether. Ohio voters back abortion rights amendment in a test case for other states. Oh, that's a bellwether. That's how they're positioning that. Obviously, Ohio is incredibly different, a different voter makeup. They're doing that to pit that result against what Florida and Georgia, et cetera, have done for two reasons. They want to get Republicans turned against each other on the issue. And they also want to hit DeSantis in Florida. That's a narrative that is going to be used to try to reduce the commitment that Republican voters have made as it concerns taxpayer-funded abortions on demand. That's a narrative you need to keep an eye on. And we're going to talk more about that when I send out the email newsletter that you'll get in the morning. So make sure you subscribe over at Substack, Chapter and Verse. The link is in all the social media profiles. But we're going to break some of that down, and we'll take a look at that for you in the email prep. So that's one to watch out for. I know. And then I don't know if Devin Archer has his deposition Thursday. You know, we'll have that information. I don't think he's going to show up. It's not going to happen. We're not going to see that. We're not going to see that until September.
I kind of think it's a twofold reason. I think there's sort of a coordination with the White House on this.
Oh, sure.
Because they need to find out whether or not Biden is who they're going to be going with. They need a little more time to figure that out.
I agree. Completely agree. Okay. Today in Stupidity came.
All right. Speaking of figuring things out, Kamala Harris is today in Stupidity. She's in Chicago today, and this is what she's saying.
Before the president and I took office, our seniors had to make the impossible decision.
What?
Between either putting food on the table or filling their prescription.
That's literally not true at all. As a matter of fact, those retirees, they were actually enjoying higher 401ks and larger savings than anyone is today. But thank you, Kamala, for that little piece of stupidity.
Mm-hmm.
Always good to hear from you.
Yeah. And we'll have that in there as well, because DeSantis hit back on that. And that it's just not anywhere. It's not even in anywhere accurate. Good heavens. This is all. Meanwhile, we're all going to be on X.
Yeah.
Xing. Can you say tweeting? You can't say tweeting. Xing.
You can still say it.
Xing with an X. I don't know. That doesn't even make sense. Like, I don't even know how to use that word. Xing? How does that? I don't know. It's making my head hurt. All right, folks. That does it for us today. Make sure you find us on Facebook, YouTube as well. And I'll be back behind the mic with you tomorrow.